For many of them, it was a great adventure of their lives. They left behind friends, families, hometowns that maybe they had never left before. And they went to take part in the great war, the war to end all wars. On the line was their culture, their nation, their empires. And it drew people from all walks of life. It drew people who were older, who were kind of regulars in the army, or maybe a little past their prime, as well as young people just entering the prime of life. It drew the rich who were in military school and preparing for this. It drew the poor who had no idea what they were getting into. But they all set out on this adventure together and into an absolute nightmare. You see, the technology had gotten a lot better. Rifles were able to fire more accurately and more quickly than at any time before. Machine guns could mow down a whole row of people at once, and artillery fire was more deadly than anyone thought possible. But the tactics had not gotten better. And so they had to learn the hard way. At first, it was a war fought in the open country as Germany raced to try to knock France out of the war as quickly as possible. And the British and the French tried to stop the German advance. For a while, they just keep trying to outflank each other. And in the open country, it is absolute bloodshed. So they started going underground. They dug trenches that became systems as a part of other trenches. And pretty soon, what had been a war fought in the open country now became this static siege warfare. And in time, inside those trenches, you would have barracks and headquarters and even some makeshift hospitals sometimes. But not in 1914. In 1914, they were ditches. Ditches with poor drainage, which meant there was always standing water and sometimes as much as 3 or 4 feet of mud. That standing water in December of 1914 turned to slush as the snow fell. The men couldn't peek their head up above the trench, or a sniper would pick them off. They had to sit there huddled in the cold. They couldn't light fires, otherwise it would attract artillery fire. All they could do all day was just clean out the mud that got into everything. Until they went over that trench. In the week before Christmas 1914, the French launched an offensive of 250,000 men. They didn't gain an inch. The British threw 2 battalions at the Germans. They were nearly all cut down. It was absolute misery. But on December 24th, 1914, the British soldiers reported hearing singing from the German trenches. And they began to see these lights. You see, the Germans celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve. So they made makeshift Christmas trees and they displayed them so they could be seen from the British trenches. They sang their Christmas carols, they gave gifts, and they laughed. And it wasn't long before the British started joining in. They sang Silent Night together from opposite trenches. One yelled Merry Christmas to the other trench, and on it went that night. In the midst of that terrible war, that was a good night. And then Christmas Day dawned. And for the first time, and who knows how long, there was no artillery fire, there were no shots fired. It was just quiet. And one side began to yell the other side, if you don't shoot, neither will we. And pretty soon a few brave souls popped up from their trenches, and for a while they just agreed to offer safe quarters so they could bury their dead. But then it went from there. Pretty soon everyone started leaving behind the gloomy mud of their trenches to stand in the light of day. They talked with their adversaries. They exchanged gifts. They held Christmas services together. In some places, they even played soccer against each other. They celebrated Christmas like they were people who grew up in the same town. And when Christmas Day was over, they got back in their trenches, and the war went on. And 1915 was not a good year. 1915 saw the introduction of poison gas to the front lines. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers died. So that by the time Christmas 1915 rolled around, not many people were all that interested in a truce anymore. But they had that moment, that time, where peace seemed to reign in the midst of chaos. You ever heard that story? It's called the Christmas Truce. I think they made like a made-for-TV movie out of it. They have all kind of documentaries about it. And I like that story. It's a good example of the peace of Christmas kind of transcending even the worst of circumstances. But is that all this is? Is this time of year just a truce? Is it just a break in the middle of the gloom of life where we agree to come out of our trenches, get along for the kids, drink some eggnog, give some gifts, have some laughs before we get back into our trenches and start killing each other all over again? I mean, is this just a time of year where we get to leave behind the stress of our life and lose ourselves in nonsense and silliness and distraction before the real world comes back? I mean, is it just a time where we get to leave behind the oppression of our lives and for a while do what I want to do, spend what I want to spend, go where I want to go before I've got to figure out how to pay for it a week later? Is Christmas just a truce? Just a good day or two in the midst of a gloomy world? If you read Isaiah 9, if you think about the announcement that the angel made to Mary, think about the Christmas story, you'll see God had more in mind than that. And boy, do the people need it. Because the people of Zebulun and Naphtali, they knew what it was to live in gloom. Because whether it was the Assyrians or the Babylonians or even the Arameans, they always came in through the north. And it was always the people of Zebulun and Naphtali, that region of Galilee, that were always conquered first, trampled first. Even in the days of Solomon, the golden age of Israel, Solomon actually gives away 10 of its cities to a king named Hiram who helped build the temple. That king went and toured those cities. You know what he said? He called it the land of Kabul, which means worthless, good for nothing. He didn't want them. Solomon couldn't even give it away. In Jesus' day, the running joke was that the Messiah could come from there. These people needed more than a truce. They needed more than just a good day. And so do we. And so Jesus, he had more in mind than that. Here's what Isaiah says about his coming in Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who are in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the days of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. Can you see the picture he's painting? It's a picture of people who leave behind the gloom of their lives to stand in the light of day. A picture of people who rejoice the kind of joy you have when you go through something. Like the joy a farmer in those days had, who maybe was used to people coming in and taking his crops so his family struggled to find something to eat the next year. But this time, he actually gets his harvest in. This time, the food is safe. And they rejoice. It's that kind of joy. It's the kind of joy a warrior feels when he sits and he looks at the other side of a battlefield. He knows he's going to have to go over there. He wonders what's going to happen. And then he goes and they fight that battle. And not only does he survive, but he enjoys the spoils of victory. It's that kind of joy. It's the kind of joy that someone who's been oppressed, someone who's been enslaved feels when they breathe free air for the first time. It's a joy that's historic. The kind of thing that's remembered for generations, the same way they remembered how Gideon defeated the Midianites. Do you get the picture? Can you see all these old soldiers taking their old military uniforms and just burning them in the fire? Because this is more than a truce. Because they're not going to need them anymore. And at the center of that picture is not some politician, it's not some warrior, it's not some king or queen or prince in the way we often think about them, but the center of the picture is the most vulnerable of human beings, a child. He continues, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. And the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." The key to the whole thing, the key to your place in something that is more than a truce, is found in that child that was born to you. Even though you live thousands of years later on the other side of the globe, it is as much yours as it was theirs. And as he says, the whole thing hinges on him. Because ultimately, everything will fall underneath his authority. And how many times haven't we been disappointed by people in that same position who made big promises and they told us they'd change everything, only to watch as nothing turned out the way we thought. But this one's different. And the reason why is revealed in his names. It's different because he's a wonderful counselor, which means he has a plan. A plan that comes from his infinite wisdom. A wisdom that is beyond our ability to understand, just as he is beyond our ability to understand. And yet it's a plan for your salvation, for your eternal future, for peace, even in the midst of chaos. He's called Mighty God. And he's not the first one to claim to be mighty. All kinds of people claim that. But his might does not come at our expense when so many others do. So many others claim to be strong as they send other people to fight their battles, and then they swoop in and they claim the credit after it's over, but not this one. This is one has almighty power, and he uses that power for us so we can live our life, die our death, and walk out of the grave on our behalf. He's called Everlasting Father because this will never expire. His time will never end. He will always be, and he will be with us with the love that a father has for their child. He's called Prince of Peace because that is exactly what he's after. You see, those names are the reason why he's the key to the whole picture. And it's the reason why this is more than a truce. Because without that child, the best you can hope for from this time of year is just a break in the fighting. A time to get along for the kids, have some eggnog, give some gifts, and then get back to it again. A time to leave behind the stress of your life, to chase something silly and some distractions before real life comes crashing in. A time to do what you want and then have to figure out some way to pay for it later. We don't need that. We need real peace. A peace that lasts. And in the last verse of our sermon text, that's what he says we have. It says of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. It says he rules over all. There's nothing that does not fall beneath his authority. And that day will never end. He will always be the one who controls it. He is right now at this moment. And in a world where so often evil seems to get away with it, he's a God who on the one hand keeps justice always before his eyes, and yet who's righteous, and who isn't just good himself, but who makes us righteous, who takes away our sin and makes us all that God demands that we be. So we know exactly where we stand with him. So we know that even if life is falling apart around us, we have a peace because he is on our side. So many times promises like this are made from kings and queens and people in authority, and they can't live up to it. But this time it'll happen because, as it says, it is his passion. See, he came not just to give us truce, but to give us a peace that lasts. Christmas 1914, that was a good day. But then the war continued. And it kept raging on for years and years, another almost 4 years before there'd be peace. Over the course of that struggle, there'd be an estimated between 16 and 23 million deaths, both soldiers as well as civilians. And after all that fighting and all that destruction that to this day has left the landscape changed and scarred, finally they'd have peace for a generation, until the next war that was somehow worse. And if you turn on your TVs, you're going to notice they're at it again. But that is how it goes. You see, the best our world can hope to offer is a break in the conflict, a truce. It's all they have the ability to give you. But you and I in the Christ child have a peace that is regardless of the situation in which we find ourselves. Peace to know that the wonderful counselor is on our side, that from his infinite wisdom he has crafted a plan for us that brings us eternal salvation, and everything in our life leads us there. Peace to know we have a mighty God on our side who exercises his power not at our expense, but at his, so we can have the victory, who lived, died, and rose so we can be his children. He's an everlasting Father. In a world where so many people are there one moment and gone the next, he always is, always has been, always will be, and he loves you with the perfect love of a father. He's a Prince of Peace, because that's what he's interested in. And that's what he's given you in his son, Jesus. Make no mistake, as you celebrate Christmas, it's not just a day off, it's not just a break for a week, but it's a peace that endures. Amen.
Thanks for listening to Emmanuel's Sermon Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about Emmanuel, you can follow us on Facebook or visit us at imluth.org. That's immluth.org. Have a great day.